All right, good afternoon, everyone. It is 12:40 on Thursday, February 11th. And I love that you guys all jump in here at bang on the dot, 12:40. Everybody's jumping in. It's perfect. I had a class last semester. It was a Chem 30A class, and I was teaching the lab portion of it. And it was all online, and the lecture, the person who was teaching the lectures was doing it all remote. And so all the lectures were video lectures that were posted online. There was no live lectures. And I was offering lab live to try to give them some live interaction. And the first lab class, I had like 5 students. And the second lab class, I had like 3. And then the rest of the semester, I had like maybe 1 person that would show up once in a while. And most of the time I was talking to the computer and just recording lectures and putting them up. And I couldn't understand why, when somebody's offering to be there live to like be able to ask questions and do things, why they wouldn't show up. I had no idea. It was killing me. But that's my way of saying thank you. And I appreciate you all. I love you all. You're awesome. Okay. Today's a big lecture. Today is chapter 12, synthesis. And this is probably the hardest part of what we do. And so I've introduced this, and we started talking about this in the 2 labs, both the morning lab and the afternoon lab. We started talking about synthesis, and we started sort of this retrosynthetic analysis idea. And the textbook in chapter 12, I was on lunch break after this morning's lab lecture, I went through chapter 12 and looked at it. And I'm pretty darn impressed with the way that he has broken down chapter 12. And I like his starting points and looking at reactions. I like to pick up sort of in the second half where he starts the retrosynthetic analysis and looking at retrosynthetic analysis more. And so I'm going to pick up from there and then with more examples sort of introduce how it is that we do things. So maybe let's go ahead and jump into it. And so this is chapter 12, synthesis. And when we start synthesis, most of the time, the way that we look at a problem or the way that a synthesis problem is given is to provide some sort of starting material and to ask you to create some desired product out of this. Actually, and I meant to be, that was going to be my product. I'm looking at it, I'm saying, what am I going to make out of that? I needed to reverse that. And so you have a starting material. A source and a desired product. And the best way to work these is a system that's called retrosynthesis. And retrosynthesis was first started by E.J. Corey. And actually, E.J. Corey was awarded the Nobel Prize for many of his synthesis ideas. I don't know if it was the retrosynthesis that he won the Nobel Prize for, but it was a way of taking and working backwards from very large molecules, breaking them down and coming up with reactions to be able to put them back together. And so the retrosynthesis idea is an idea of working backwards. And the reason that we work backwards is because it's a whole lot easier to figure out how do you tear apart a molecule so that you can put it back together. And the retrosynthesis has several ideas. Number one, we use a specific arrow type. This arrow means comes from. And And so we use this area, this type of arrow, to work backwards so that we have a product. And in essence, what we do is we work backwards from that product and we say, this comes from, and then we figure out what it is that this thing could be made from. How can we put this bond back together? And in one way, I can envision a reaction where I could take, if I had a bromide here, and I could do this from an E2 reaction using potassium terbutoxide. And that's how we would envision it. And so we use the different arrows. The arrow that represents the retrosynthesis comes from. Now, when we start to look at how we tear something apart, there's several different ways in which we tear things apart. There are bond disconnections. This is breaking things into two. So if I have X bound to Y, I can break it. And there might be several ways in which I can break it. We'll look at some different ways that I could break this in a second. I'll just present one idea that I could break it into a cation and an anion. There are what are called functional group transformations. A functional group transformation may be something where we're taking an alkyl halide and converting it through a reaction, such as an E2 reaction, into an alkene. And there are many different examples of functional group transformations that we can show. And there may be types of things that we won't encounter yet that are concerted. And I'll just introduce these concerted transformations. Is another big idea. And this is where we have something that may undergo a ring formation or breaking apart of a ring, where we're combining parts of a molecule. And they do certain types of concerted reactions where all the bond breaking and bond making happen simultaneously. So there's all these different types of disconnections and bond transformations and functional group transformations and concerted transformations that we can do that are represented by these arrows. But where it starts is it starts by taking a look at an idea of a synthon. A synthon, this is the a molecule that it represents a representation of a molecule, electrophile or nucleophile, that has desired properties. For instance, when I take a molecule and I break a bond. And I'm trying to think, I didn't have specific examples in mind when I wanted to build this. Let's just start here. And I want to break this bond for a particular reason. There are two ways, actually there's three ways in which I could break the bond apart. I could break the bond apart such that one side becomes a cation and the other side becomes an anion. Or I could break it apart such that this side becomes the anion and the other side becomes the cation. This breaking apart is a heterolytic breakage. In heterolytic, what I'm doing is I'm either taking the electrons from the bond and I'm giving them to the right-hand side, or I'm taking the electrons from the bond and I'm giving them to the left-hand side. These pieces, each one of these pieces is called a synthon. They represent either electrophiles or nucleophiles, and they represent ways in which I can put this molecule back together. So if I take the top part and I say, all right, here's A and here's B. The synthon, if I list the synthon as the carbocation, the actual molecule that could serve for that is something that has a leaving group on it. And specifically, it would be better if I actually even put that leaving group on it as a bromide or a chloride or a tosylate. And so we have the synthon that is, in this case, an electrophile. And we have the molecule that represents it that has the partial positive. And so it's this property that I'm finding in the molecule. The other synthon that came from that disconnect was, calculator, we don't need that, was a CH3 minus. And a molecule that could represent that, I need a little bit more room here, so I'm going to take this guy and stick it underneath here. A molecule that could represent the synthon with a minus charge on it could be a grignard, because that's a carbon that has a negative charge. And so in taking those two and reacting those two together, I can put that bond back together. Is this making sense? In B, I took it apart the other direction. So in B, we have the synthon, which has the negative charge, and we have the CH3 that has the positive charge. The actual molecules that would represent these, in this case, would have to be some sort of grignard here and some sort of alkyl halide here. And that would give me my minus and my partial positive. And so this idea of tearing something apart and coming up with synthons, molecules that represent what you want, and then figuring out the actual molecule is a way of working backwards, is a way of tearing it apart and then thinking about how do I put it back together? What are my options? What sort of reactions can there be to put this thing back together. And as you can see, I can come up with two ways to put this molecule back together. I could say that A, I could take a CH3-MgBr and react it with a substrate that has a bromide on it. And in so doing, I will make that bond back together. Or I could take B, take the molecule here that has the bromide on it with the magnesium making the grignard, and I could react that with CH3Br. And again, I put the molecule back together. And both of these work out just fine. And so both are viable. However, sometimes one may not work and another may work easier or better. And so it's always important to consider your options and to consider what it is that you can actually do in terms of this. And understanding this idea of synthons as not being a real molecule yet, but being an idea of a molecule. And so when we start to think about synthons, there's a couple of ways in which things can be torn apart and ways to consider. So, two main disconnects. This is bond breaking. If we have A bound to B and I break it apart, I can break it apart heterolytically where two electrons go towards B. So I could get A plus and B minus. I could break it the other way, breaking the bond here and shifting electrons towards A. I could get A minus and B plus. These are both, as we said, heterolytic. Or now that we've gone through the free radical chapter, the other possibility is to split it down the middle, send one electron one way and one electron the other way. And this would give me two free radicals. And this would be homolytic. And so there's three basic ways that I can tear apart a bond. I can think about the two heterolytic ways to tear it apart, or a homolytic way to tear it apart. And each one of these three ways will produce synthons. And one of those synthons should be a viable alternative to putting it back together. That is the entire idea behind retrosynthesis. And then this idea of synthons, let me show you an idea behind sort of a synthon idea. Let's take one of the molecules that I might want to make, this guy. And let's say that we desire to make this alcohol from simpler starting materials. Maybe of four carbons or less. So sometimes when we say to make this, the problem might be presented this way. From any materials, four carbons or less, synthesize this alcohol. So that's how we would construct the problem. And that means that I need to take a look at how many carbons I've got, One, two, three, four, five, six. I've got six carbons in this molecule. And I've got to find a way to break it up and to take a bond apart someplace. And without knowing where to take it apart or where to start, it's really hard. However, let me just show you an idea here, because what I'm really trying to get at is like a synthon idea. If I split this molecule between carbon three and four, there's two ways that I could think about taking it apart. One way to take it apart, as we just said, was to take and put the positive charge on that carbon. And the negative charge on that carbon. Or the other way around. Now, these are all synthons. And recognizing the equivalent, the molecular equivalent of a synthon, is now the challenge. Okay, so what are some synthetic equivalents for these? This is going to be the hard part of pattern recognition and learning how to do this. This one, where you have a carbocation here, or is drawn as a carbocation, we need to think of positive charges or partial positive, and negative or partial negative, that it doesn't have to be always a full-on negative or a full-on positive. It can be something that has a partial positive that can represent that positive charge. And so one idea that I could see here would be to go with a halogen that can function as a leaving group, giving me the partial positive. Now, what about a negative charge on this carbon? Well, if I put a Grignard here, I can't put a Grignard and have a protic hydrogen in place. That's not viable. So this piece of taking and trying to do MgBr and the OH, these two don't work together. That's a problem. And so that's not viable. There may be another viable alternative, and I'll show you one in a second. But let's take a look at the other side. The other side, I could absolutely make a Grignard. Out of that left-hand side. And I could absolutely put a bromide onto this other carbon over here to give me the positive. But there's an easier way. When you have an oxygen that is this close to a positive charge, and you think about dumping the electrons into that positive charge, that thing with a positive charge and the oxygen on it can be represented by an epoxide. And it is a pattern where I'm looking at the carbons one and two, one and two, and the idea that this could attack that carbon and open up to give me that pattern. And that this guy is a particular synthon that has a synthetic equivalent, which is an epoxide. And so this side over here is easier. Not easy, I'm not gonna say it's easy, because you've never seen this before. And the idea of taking a synthon that looks like this and coming up with an equivalent for that synthon to be able to put it together is kind of challenging at first, until you start to recognize the patterns and see the patterns. And I have a huge big sheet that I'm gonna give you with lots and lots of patterns and lots of problems and repetition and examples for you guys to work on. in order to learn these patterns. Okay, the other one over here, I said I would show you, does have a synthetic equivalent. And that synthetic equivalent is this. It's a two-carbon chunk with a negative charge. And I can get it back to that alcohol through a series of transformations. And it's possible to do that. So let me take each one of these and show you kind of how they would go back together to make that molecule. So we'll call, I'm going to call the one on the right A because I want to do that first. And then I'll come back and I'll do B. So let me just show A real quick. If I take a halogen and react it with magnesium, I can make a Grignard. And then that Grignard can be reacted with the epoxide and then acidified in order to produce the new bond, which I'll do in red. And so I have taken 1, 2, 3, 4, and I've added 5 and 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, added 5 and 6, and made my new bond. And that is how I would envision A going back together. How is it that I can turn this alkyne back into that alcohol and make that bond disconnect where I did between the two atoms there? Let's look at that reaction. B, I could take my halogen and react it with sodium acetylide. After reacting it with sodium acetylide, I have created the new bond. And then I have my two carbon chunk appended to it. But now to get it back to the alcohol, I need to go through a series of reactions. Number one, I'll reduce it using Lindlar. And then after reducing it with Lindlar, then I'll do BH3THF. And then the oxidation, sodium hydroxide, hydrogen peroxide, and water. And that will give me the hydroxyl group. And if I track that new carbon that I made, or the new carbon-carbon bond that I made, just to see that it's going in the exact same place as the last one. And my numbering scheme, 1, 2, 3, 4. This was 5 and 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and 6. And finally down here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 and 6. And we took a longer path, longer and harder, but viable, showing that there's more than one answer to these synthesis problems and more than one way to think about how to tear them apart. And the whole idea hangs on being able to take the synthon and seeing a molecular equivalent for the synthon. That's what retrosynthesis relies on. And so from this, what I like to try to do is I like to try to focus a little bit on synthons and trying to find a molecular equivalent for a synthon. And most of the time, when we're trying to find that molecular equivalent for a synthon, they're not too bad. Okay, so one idea that we've just shown for a synthon is a two-carbon component that has a positive charge on it. And the molecular example that would give me that property would be an epoxide. And that has to do with the electronegativity on the oxygen and the fact that that carbon is a strong electrophilic carbon. So there's one example. There are many other examples that I could show where we could have a carbon here that has two hydrogens on it. This is called an oxycarbenium ion. We don't really need to know the name so much as the concept and the idea that what I have done in the first one is I took the lone pairs in the first one and dumped them in to make a bond to be able to come up with the molecular equivalent. We can do the same thing with these types of molecules here, where the molecular equivalent could be formaldehyde. If I need to tear apart a molecule that has an R group in it and a hydrogen, and I need to split this type of bond, this is another type of oxycarbenium ion. This one, when I dump the electrons into it, becomes just an aldehyde. And so depending upon what that R group is, I could come up with different aldehydes. I could do the same thing with two R groups on it. And what would two R groups turn out to be? What type of functional group?
Ketone.
Exactly. So you start to see the idea of how we can create different synthetic equivalents out of these different bond disconnections and the types of bond disconnections that I start to look for. Let's see, what else do I want to show you? And there are many of these that we can produce. What about if I just want, this is a new page, so we'll keep going, synthon, molecular equivalent, or synthetic, they often call these synthetic equivalents. I call them molecular equivalents, but a synthetic equivalent is good too. Well, it's actually more correct than what I'm doing. A molecule that we need. What if I just have R plus? This is just some cation. My molecular equivalent here is an R group that could be attached to a bromide or a chloride or an iodide or a tosylate. These guys, and I know you guys haven't seen these yet. These are super important. We'll cover how to make them and what their structure is and what they look like. We'll cover that today. So I'll get over those guys in a little bit. If we want to come up with R minus, depending upon the structure, R minus can oftentimes be the Grignard. Or sometimes it could be that we have some sort of alkyl anion, depending on the number of carbons that we need or what the structure of those carbons are. There are also other organometallics. There are organocuprates and organolithiums. There are all kinds of things. So it could also be that I have an organolithium. It is like a Grignard. Only harder to handle and more reactive. And so those are possibilities as well. And there are other possibilities that we can go through that we'll be able to see as we go forward. Okay, and so as we start to go through some of these molecules and some of these synthetic ideas, working backwards becomes an important concept. Okay, so let me, you guys have been kind of quiet. Nothing's going on in the chat. How are we doing? Any questions coming up? I know it's all new, so there may not be any questions yet. And that's okay. It's also okay to feel like a deer in the headlights and go, what the heck is going on right now? This is not cool. This is hurting my brain.
So when you say that the synthon is R plus, that's saying that there's a partial positive on the R plus in the RBR, not when the leaving group leaves, it'll revert to the synthon?
Correct. What I'm saying is that the molecule has the properties already built into it that I desire. So the molecule itself is an electrophile, and it doesn't have to be a carbocation. It can be a partial positive. And the leaving group, oftentimes these reactions are SN2 reactions. They are not SN1 or E1. They tend to go through concerted reaction mechanisms, and because those are easier to control. When you go through a carbocation, full carbocation, they rearrange. Uh-huh. And they can do all kinds of things, and that's just a pain in the butt. So yes, what I'm looking for is I'm looking to construct controllable reactions wherein the incoming nucleophile is going to knock out the leaving group. And it does that because of the partial positive that was on the carbon to begin with.
And there's also an implied partial negative on the electrophile.
There is a partial negative on each of these guys because of their inherent electronegativity. And on the electrophile, these are actually true full negative charges. There are ones that I could show that have partial negative charges. For instance, if I want a synthon that looks like this, and we don't know this chemistry yet, so this is a harder chemistry to show you, but if I want a molecule that has a negative charge in that position, an equivalent of that is what's called an enolate. And they are made from, they're made by taking the carbonyl that you want and reacting it with a strong base, which pulls the proton, pushing the electrons into the more favored oxygen anion for the resonance contributor. But this molecule has a strong partial minus at that carbon end and acts as a carbon nucleophile. So many of these molecular equivalents of an anion synthon has a full negative charge. However, there are ones that I can show that will have partial negative charges on the carbons as an electrophile, as a nucleophile. Okay, Okay, a little confused how R plus can be R bromide, which you can convert to R MgBr, but oh, that is a great question. How do I answer this? What you're alluding to is the fact that I can do umpalongs. An umpalong is a polarity reversal. You heard me use that word before, and we actually defined what that word before was. When we did a Grignard, we talked about how a Grignard can actually be an umpalong. This is polarity reversal. So yes, when I have an alkyl halide, such as a bromide, I have a partial positive and a partial minus, and the polarity resides in this direction. When I treat it with magnesium, the Grignard reaction changes the polarity such that now this is full on negative to positive and minus, and the polarity has reversed. Which means that, yes, when I take apart a bond, I can do multiple things with it. And it gives me options in how to put that bond back together, in that I can use this thing as the starting material for an electrophile, in that up here, if I need a side with R plus, it can be this that is my starting material for that to put the bond back together. Or it could be that what I need is an R minus, and that R minus is the Grignard that's coming from here. But ultimately that Grignard came from the alkyl halide to begin with. And so yes, the alkyl halide is the starting point for both. So what we could see is that we could say, all right, look, if I have this alkyl halide, the alkyl halide could be the progenitor of my partial positive electrophile. It is the electrophile just in itself. Or through reaction with magnesium, it could be that this thing is a nucleophile. And it is both, and it depends on how I want to use it or what I need, and it can do both. Does that help to answer the question? Cool. And there are a number of functional groups that are like that, that allow me to go either direction with the functional group. And so normally what we do is when we do a synthesis, for instance, I gave you the molecule that looked like this. And this is newer to me. I haven't spent a whole lot of time studying this, but what Corey proposes is that Corey proposes taking the natural partial positive and partial minus that is in this bond and saying, all right, when I see that, what I can do is I can use that as a guide to decide how I want to take the molecule apart, plus, minus, and that following the natural polarity of a bond, allows you to then be able to find a place where we take that polarity and alternate it across the carbon framework to find a natural place where you can pull it apart and create the synthons that you want. Now, in this case, it doesn't work quite the way that it's intended to work because it doesn't give me the natural epoxide, which is the easier one, but it does give me the idea that I could start this from this guy and this guy. And those were my starting molecules that then I would then make the anion, react it with this, And then I'd have to go through the several reactions that I would need to in order to convert that back into the hydroxyl group. And we already showed that. And so that was sort of Corey's idea of being able to take the natural polarity of a bond and to propagate it through disconnect, and then to look at these polarities, and it should give you sort of an idea of how to put it back together so you know what to do. I don't tend to teach it this way. I tend to teach it from consider your options, consider both options, find the one that works for you, because some people see one, some people see the other, and then take it forward from that point. So let's take a molecule and let's just do a problem and show how we would go through and do the retrosynthesis. And I'm going to take it back. To this guy. And because we were using this already, I think this will be easier to follow. Okay, so we have already discussed how to break apart this first piece. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to break this apart. I'm going to use my comes from. And I'm going to choose to do this the easier way, which is to split it here. I'll come out with my two synthons. I'll give the positive charge to this side. And I'll give the negative side to that side. I'll say that these two molecules, these synthons, represent the epoxide and a Grignard. And now I need to ask, where does the Grignard come from? How do I make a Grignard? From what molecule is the Grignard made?
One bromo, two methyl.
Yeah, you were on it. That was good. Remembering that we actually have names for molecules and we can call molecules by their name. One bromo, two methyl propane. That works. And the alkyl halide. Now, I have to get back to this starting material. And is there any way for me to brominate a primary carbon position? The answer is no. We can bromate the tertiary position. So we can brominate that position, but we can't easily brominate the primary position. So how do I get this back to this? Well, let's take it back to the only thing that we know that we can take it back to. How do I make a bromide in that position? That bromide would have to be made from the double bond. And then that double bond, if I treat it with, well, what? You tell me. What do I treat that double bond with to put the bromide in that position? JC, nice, thank you. HBr and peroxide. Anti-Markovnikov addition on the double bond with HBr and peroxide would do it. Okay, and this double bond, I might be able to envision that it could come from that guy. What reagent would I use to remove the proton and to make that double bond? A base, but which base? Give me a base. I need a specific. Base doesn't do it for me. Sodium hydroxide. Yes, I suppose you could do it with sodium hydroxide. there's two bases that are better. LDA is one. And potassium tributoxide, good. Okay, nice. All right, I like the bulky bases. The reason is because a small base can sometimes do substitution, whereas a bulky base will almost always only do elimination. So if I want an elimination, I go for a bulky base, of which we have two. There are a bazillion of them, but those are the two most common that we'll see used. Okay. And then this guy, I can envision going back to that starting material. And what reaction allows me to put the bromide in that position? And BS in light will work. Yeah, exactly. And bromosuccinamide in light. Or we could just do it with HBr in light too. Or Br2 in light. Excuse me. Br2 in light would be just fine. So now what we'll do is we'll take all of that. I can't keep it all on the screen at the same time. Maybe I can. I'll try. And bromosuccinamide and light. Or Br2 and light. Each of those will work.
Could you remind me when you want to use NBS over Br2? What's the condition?
The only reason to use NBS over Br2 is when you're trying to do an allylic bromination. And if we do this with Br2 and light, we can get both the dibromo from the standard electrophilic addition and the desired products that will come out of this that will be the major products, depending upon what conditions we're working under. So this is a side product that I can avoid by doing NBS. And so NBS avoids the electrophilic addition to the double bond going just for the allylic bromination. That's the difference between them. And then these, this is the thermo and the kinetic. And so the remaining conditions of whether we do it under kinetic control or thermo control decides which one of these becomes the major product. Okay, but that is an aside and needs to go down out of the way because we've got to finish this up. Okay, so now I need to eliminate it. You gave me the bases already. I'll choose potassium tributoxide because it's the easier one to work with. And then it was already stated HBr and peroxide. I treat this one with magnesium. We'll do it. Sometimes I gang these together. Let's not today.
Jason?
Yes.
The BR for step two, did that get moved? Or I might have written it down wrong, but I thought it was on the other methyl.
It's equivalent.
Okay.
I drew it that way. I don't know why. They're all equivalent. So it's the same. It's just that we brominated in the tertiary position and just how I decided to draw it. So we make the Grignard. We react the Grignard then one with the epoxide, and two, dilute acid to acidify. We make the new bond, and we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. And we're done. Can you imagine how hard it would have been to take this and try to go in the forwards direction when you have no idea where it is you're trying to go or what bond you're trying to put back together? It becomes very difficult to try to go in the forwards direction to see how to put these together. And so we almost always teach it working backwards. And then from the retrosynthesis, once we've worked all the way back to the starting material, then we turn it around and we write it in the forwards direction to take us out to that product. And that's the main part of these synthesis problems. And there's some common themes that you're going to see in the synthesis problems, common themes to look for. One of them is the idea of taking a bond and migrating a double bond or walking a double bond. And let's show it this way. If we take this and we react it with HBr, we can create the tertiary bromide. If we react this with a small base in heat, something like sodium methoxide, we'll do that in methanol. We'll add some heat. This is an E2 reaction. We can generate the thermodynamic product, the more substituted product. And then from there, we can take and we can react it with HBr and peroxide. This is one way to do it. There are other ways to do this. We can put the bromide there. And then if I react it with a bulky base, in an E2 reaction, I can migrate the double bond. And you can do all sorts of things by choosing a small base versus a large base. And then down here, the bulky base. And it makes the reaction go in different directions. And you can do the double bond migration, alternating between small bases and bulky bases. That's one really big concept that we use quite frequently. The other concept that we use is, there's a bunch of them. Where do I want to go next? I guess it's more of the synthon pattern recognition in trying to figure out what molecule the synthon looks like. So as I tear apart a molecule, let me grab, I was thinking about where I've got problems. I've got my problems that I can use, but as I was looking through the book had great problems too. And so I would not hesitate to grab any of the problems in the book in chapter 12 and to tackle any of their synthesis problems. I'm looking to see if they've got one where they've got a starting material from in there to start from. We haven't done alcohols and phenols yet. Oh, and that's why, because I'm in chapter 12. I was throwing myself off. I was looking, they were giving me all the oxidations. I'm like, wait, my guys don't know oxidations yet. I'm cool. Okay, here we go. Let's take a problem that looks like this. Okay, so one of the first things when I'm presented with a problem that I try to do is, number one, I look for a handle. What is a handle? Literally, a handle can be that group there that is the branch point. It's something that I can see in the molecule that allows me to orient the two molecules. It's my term for it. I don't have a better term for it. Look for a handle that helps to orient the two molecules so that you know where the starting material is within the product. Once you get the handle, and now we've got sort of a mapping of knowing where this molecule is, that we know that these carbons are that part, and that means that whatever is over here, this part is new. And I'm going to have to add that into the molecule. And that means that that is the bond that I'm going to ultimately have to break. When we break that bond, now we go through our process of retrosynthesis. And I have to decide what these two things are. I have to decide whether I want them to be this way, positive and negative, or do I want them to be negative and positive? And which way I choose depends on how I see the problem. And also what chemistry I know, because I will tell you that both of these, if you know enough chemistry, are completely viable. But you may be limited by the chemistry that you know. And right now, we only know chemistry to be able to do this side. We don't yet have the chemistry or know how to do the right-hand side. So let's talk about what these guys could possibly be. Let's deal with this one first, the positive charge. What could that be? So these are my synthons. I need a molecular equivalent, or what they call a synthetic equivalent. Slap a bromide on it. JC's got it. Yes. Bromide is sort of your go-to. That is exactly right. All right. So we've got that part. Now, this is the harder part. What do I do with this? What sort of molecules have one, two carbons and a negative charge? What have we dealt with a lot that has two carbons and a negative charge? Sterling and aldehyde, but it would be hard to get the negative charge on the aldehyde in that position. So think back to
alkynes.
Alkynes, exactly. Mary, nice. Okay, so you only have two options, really. You have dealt with this, and you have dealt with this. And this is all you've got. This is your total bag of tricks. Your bag is kind of limited. And so it needs to come out of that bag of tricks. And it might be difficult to know how I can use a Grignard to reform a carbonyl. But I do know that I can make a carbonyl back from a triple bond through hydration. And so I'm going to choose to use the alkynyl anion to put that back together. And there may be several steps that are going to get this back to the carbonyl, but I can do it from there. Okay, so this chunk is resolved, but I need to take this chunk back to that. So let's keep working on this side over here. Where do halogens come from in this sense? Alkenes. JC's on it. So we'll take it back to the alkene. I've got to get back to the straight hydrocarbon without anything on it. So I can't stop at the alkene. I have to take it back to something that I could do the elimination with, which is where I was before. And then that can go back to that alkene. And so you're going to see repetition, just like I'm trying to pick problems that have repetition to show you the repetition. That's the whole thing, getting enough problems to see the repetition, to recognize it, to be able to do solid pattern recognition. All right, so now what we do is we work forwards. We brominate with light, free radical. We eliminate. Producing the double bond. We then check our map and see where we're going. Yep, we got a brominate. So we do HBr and peroxide. We then react that with sodium acetylide. Get the name right. From sodium acetylide, take a look at the substitution pattern that we desire. We want the carbon with the oxygen on the second carbon in. So what do I need to do to this to get my final material? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I want the oxygen on number 4. What do I need to do? What do I need to treat it with? I need to make an enol, but there's two ways to make the enol. I could do it with 9-BBN and then oxidize it, or I could make it with water and sulfuric acid, NHgSO4, mercury 2 sulfate. Yeah, and I like that one. Water H2SO4, mercury sulfate. And we go through the enol and we get that if we did 9-BBN and we went the 9-BBN route and then we did the oxidation, also extremely valuable, but would give us the aldehyde instead of the ketone. Which shows exactly how these two problems are connected, because I could have asked you, how do I make that material? And then you would have done everything the same all the way through, except we would have just changed that last step.
Will you wait a sec?
Yep.
Okay, awesome, thanks.
Yeah. So I'm going to tie these together. By saying that that step is how I would have made that last material. And so you can see sort of the commonality in these sorts of problems. And actually that was the next problem that they kind of give you there, which is kind of cool. Okay, time check, 1:52. I got about 7 minutes left. I promised I would show you what a tosylate is. And I think that's a good thing to do here for a second, because it gives you options in leaving groups. And you're going to need this. And you're going to need it sooner rather than later. Let's say that I have an alcohol and I want to convert that into this is fine. This is good. I want to convert this into here. And when we map the problem and we find our handle, and I give handles in all sorts of ways. I give groups that help you to see, usually they're digeminal groups that help you to find the handle, to help you find the location in the molecule. Once in a while on a really hard problem that is an optional problem that I give you, I make it hard to find the handle and it could go in multiple different directions and you have to get creative. But most of the time I'm kind and I give you a good handle to find. Notice that we're adding two carbons in. This is just like the last problem. Except somehow I need to convert this into a leaving group. Right now, it's a really crappy leaving group. Hydroxyl groups are poor leaving groups. And the order of leaving groups, better to good to better, is that we have chlorides, bromides, iodides. And then what's better than an iodide is a mesylate. A tosylate and a triflate. And these guys are all under the family of what are called tosylates. They all have the same structure. It is this structure. They are all related in that a mesylate mesomethyl is this group. A tosylate is made from paratoluyl sulfonic acid, and that's where the name tosylate comes from. And then the triflate is a CF3 group. And so these are in order of better leaving group. A good leaving group equals a weak acid or weak base. And so these guys are super weak bases. By virtue of the resonance that can occur throughout these systems. And what I'm doing is I'm going from methyl to toluol to trifluoromethyl, is I'm increasing the electron withdrawing ability of the group, which stabilizes it even more. So I'm going to stronger and stronger electron withdrawing group on that group. How do I create these things and create these really good leaving groups? The way that I create them is I take whatever alcohol it is that I have and I treat it with, if I want to make a tosylate, I treat it with TSCl. This is a tosyl chloride. I use a base that is non-nucleophilic, pyridine, and it smoothly converts it into the tosylate, and now I have a good leaving group. So what is tosyl chloride and how does that reaction work? Tosyl chloride is the acid chloride and the way in which the reaction works is that this sulfur now has a very large partial positive on it. And when your alcohol comes in and reacts with this, the oxygen attacks the sulfur. The electrons kick up. The sulfur is now attached to a whole bunch of things. The negative charge of the oxygen kicks in and pushes out the chloride. This reaction pattern is very typical of carbonyl chemistry, very typical of molecules that have carbonyls on them. And then the base is there to remove the proton so that I don't get a strong buildup of acid. And the reaction is over. And they're all made the same way. And this we call or write ROTS. Those are equivalent ways or equivalent things. And it turns an alcohol, which is a non-leaving group, into a really good leaving group. And then you can do SN2 reactions. So that's what a tosylate is. And if I wanted to make a mesylate, I use MSCL. If I want to make a triflate, I use TFCL. And the reaction mechanism does not change. It's only the group on the outside that changes. And I can do a lot of different reactions at that point. All right, I think I want to do one more day on this chapter with more examples and working more problems to give you guys a better idea of how this actually works. And if you're looking for problems to do, the problems in the book are fantastic. And they're done in such a way as to sort of like ease you into things with lots of repetition. So I would highly suggest going for it and just working in the book problems to start. And I will get some problems up for you that are additional problems. I've already got some. So that sheet that I already put up from the last chapter, from the alkyne chapter, that had some synthesis ones. And this skill set is absolutely appropriate for that. That is exactly the skill set that we're doing here. So that's what I would say to do. I also put up another quiz for you guys for the free radical chapter. So the quiz is up and I think I have it due on Monday after the weekend. For the due date on that quiz. Two short problems. By the way, these quizzes that I'm giving you, I know I'm giving you a lot of time to do them. These would typically be 10-minute or 15-minute in-class problems. So when you're freaking out about time and how much time you're worried about over the weekend spending doing that and other things you got to do, keep in mind that the intention of the quiz was really to be sort of a 15-minute maximum in-class quiz. And while, yes, I recognize that you may spend more time than that on it because of all the discussion that you're having. And I think that's why I'm really broadening out that window and trying to give you more time to work on it. So I hope that doesn't freak you out with the other things you have to do. But that's on there too. Okay, I'm over time, but I will entertain any questions. All right, I see people starting to log off, so that's okay. The other thing that I will say is perfectly normal to be overwhelmed with this lecture. Normal to be overwhelmed with this material. And just like anything with organic chemistry, there's highs and lows. And what winds up happening is, I'm going to stop the screen share here so that you can see me more than the screen. There's highs and lows with OChem. And it happens year in and year out. And when you're with me with first semester, usually I don't worry about saying it second semester, but it's worth it since I haven't been with you guys to say this because I think it's really important. Organic chemistry, you come into a lecture and you get slammed. It's like a fire hose of information. You're like, I know nothing. And your confidence just crashes and you crash and burn. And then you go home and you hit the books and you read it and you rewrite your notes. You practice some problems. You're like, yes, I'm coming back. I understand this. I'm doing okay. Everything is great. And you go back into lecture and I go, no, you don't know anything. And you just go back down again into that hole. And it's highs and lows, ups and downs. And that is the normal process of it. So as I see faces that are seeming a little nervous and upset and concerned, know that I know that it's normal, it's okay, and that I will get you through this and that we will get through this together and that this is just a normal cycle of how lectures go. So now it's on you to do your job to go and do some of that reading and do some of that processing and some of that rebuilding and get ready for me to tear you down again. No, sometimes I'll build up. I won't always tear you down. Sometimes we'll be working on problems and it'll be okay. All right, so hang in there, stay with me.
Question, what chapter is coming after 12? Are we going to do 13?
Yes, we'll go straight into 13. We'll keep going sequentially. I don't jump around in the chapters. So I'll go 12, 13. And what we're going to do is we're going to try and get through the alcohols, try and get through a little bit of the thiols, and then I cut it. And that's where we have the first test. So the first test covers all of that chemistry. And I want a clean break before we start the spectroscopy. And I want the spectroscopy to be its own material, its own focus, and its own test. And then we jump back into functional groups and back into carbonyls and aromatics and paracyclic reactions and all kinds of really cool stuff after the spectroscopy.
What chapter do you typically end on, like 22?
Okay. Maybe. Usually I don't quite make it that far. I usually make it right up until we get through the carbonyl chemistries and maybe into the amines a little bit. oftentimes I don't make it into the amines. And so what I have is for those students that are going in and taking the MCATs and taking things where those chapters become really critically important, I have study materials that I have put together that I put online for those students to be able to go through and read and do some self-study and have some practice problems. And they're my notes and my language and my way of teaching. And so they're easier to digest than going to a textbook and trying to read it on your own and do it on your own.
Okay. Cool. Thank you.
You're welcome. All right, that's all I got for you. I'm gonna stop the recording. And anybody wants to ask more questions, I'm happy to hang out and do so.
Thanks, Jason.
You're welcome.